This paid commercial may not represent the views of Hubbard Broadcasting Incorporated or Federal News Radio. Statements and opinions of this broadcast are solely those of individual contributors or advertisers as indicated. Federal News Radio does not take responsibility for those statements or opinions and accepts no responsibility or liability for any inaccuracy, errors, or omissions reported during this program.
This is AmTower Off-Center, sponsored by General Dynamics Information Technology. Every week, author, speaker, consultant Mark AmTower gives you his take on what's going on in the world of government contracting. AmTower Off-Center with your host, Mark AmTower.
Welcome to AmTower Off-Center on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. I'm Mark AmTower. My guest today is Bob Davis. Bob is a longtime friend and occasional instructor for me. Bob, welcome back to the show, man.
Thank you, Mark. Good to be here.
Little background on you and the BD profession.
Mark, I've worked in the Washington area in business development for many, many years, frankly, since the 70s, and have had various positions in business development, management of business development, capture manager, program manager on the operations side, and in recent years, I have focused on marketing.
Okay, so we first met when Tim Carney introduced us back when he was editor of WashTech early
mid 91.
Yeah, a while back. And not long after that, you started teaching BD classes for me.
Yep.
So we find ourselves in a not dissimilar position now because we'll be co-teaching in my government market master forum a couple of times this year. You solo and hopefully together with me with the latest edition of Government Marketing Best Practices, which was why we're here today, the marketing side of the equation. So what are the big challenges for the market right now? What are the conditions that marketers have to take into consideration?
Mark, I think many people may have a certain amount of optimism for 2014 after a tough 2013. I think there are a number of challenges that are going to continue to play out in 2014 that are going to affect revenue and profit and wins by services companies in our industry, particularly the medium-sized companies and small business. Government agencies today don't have enough experienced procurement staff, and this is going to slow procurement actions and awards. I believe this will drive some agencies to increasingly use IDIQ contract vehicles to save time and effort compared to a full and open RFP, request for proposal. I think some government contracting officers are going to turn to small business in some cases, maybe break up some work, maybe drive work from an incumbent to small business again to hopefully accelerate the procurement process. The government is going to increasingly seek business expertise, and I emphasize business expertise for their respective operational domains. We saw, particularly in the 80s and 90s, the government would throw technology at a problem. They had a need. They would buy a widget, a program, hardware, software, and try to address issues. Today, government wants business partners and business expertise. And frankly, the technology is a secondary consideration. A lot of companies have internal organization structural issues because their structure and culture is geared to the bull market of yesteryear when the budgets were growing, and they have not really made the switch to the current bear market. And again, LPTA is going to continue to affect procurements, either real or imagined, depending on the language of the procurement. And I think IT service margins particularly are going to continue to increase downward pressure as IT service experience ongoing commodification.
Okay. Now, you brought up the LPTA thing briefly. The sequestration effect overall, still there's still a a little misconception out there. A lot of people thought there would be a precipitous drop when it first kicked in. There is, however, an incremental nature to that particular beast, and it impacts the culture.
Absolutely. The sequestration, even though the budget has been signed and passed and the current budget will give some relief to sequestration, the effects of sequestration are not instantly going away. Again, real or imagined, because of government culture, processes set in place 2 or 3 years ago to cut budgets and review every program are going to continue. And the effects, the ghost of sequestration, are going to continue this year and next year.
Okay. Now, all of these things sort of converge on a number of issues, not the least of which is inadequate contracting and procurement staff, and oftentimes undertrained contracting and procurement staff. And I'm not picking on the 1102 community here. It's simply a condition that has occurred or evolved since Mr. Gore's vice president, then Vice President Gore's report of the National Performance Review, where the downsizing of that particular workforce started. So, how does this impact this whole thing?
Well, it's when government contracting people are working 65 plus hours a week and are handling far too many procurements on their desk, they don't have time to go get training. You wonder about their professional development, about their career path, and they're in a tough situation and they're going to use the tools at hand to try to do a tough job. And that's going to play out on this individual companies in a variety of different ways.
Okay. Does that lead to increased use of GWACs and IDIQs?
Absolutely. I believe that to the extent possible, you're going to see IDIQ contract vehicles that have a wide range of services used increasingly, again, to one, accelerate the procurement cycle. And two, there's an argument the government can spend less time doing traditional requirements development and shifting the risk to industry to the extent possible.
Okay. Now, do you see one of the results of this, it's an increased protest level again?
Yes. The protest numbers have been going up every year in recent years. And frankly, I read last year that the protests were not sustained well over 99% of the time, which is a message right there. Filing a protest is expensive. Prosecuting it is expensive. And companies, in my personal opinion, need to think through if this is really a wise course of action.
Yeah, but if you miss out on a particular IDIQ or GWAC, you're missing out on probably a large chunk of your potential business going forward, because if you have two or three of those in your arsenals as opposed to one, then you've got the likelihood of an agency preferring to buy from you because you have a vehicle of choice.
Absolutely. And I recognize on protest companies sometimes are fighting for economic survival or fighting to keep revenue going on a particular contract vehicle. But the government, in its pursuit of IDIQ GWAC vehicles, selects companies they think are going to be responsive and cut off a wide segment of the market that is left out and put in a situation they don't respond, or they respond with partners. Sometimes that model works, sometimes it doesn't, of course.
Okay, so the Eagle 2 thing in particular, you had 17 or so winners and 27 protesters, and I can't read the tea leaves, but if I had to wager, I'd say that DHS is probably simply going to add some companies to the contract rather than go through the entire process.
Again. This is entirely possible. This has been going on for a period of time. There are complexities here that even I certainly do not understand, and I think there are better ways to go about this that can should be considered.
Okay. Now, I know that you think that because of a number of the issues here, government may increasingly turn to small business procurement actions to get some things done.
Yes, at a day-to-day working level, not at the policy level, I think contracting officers are going to seek small business partners that they know or think they know to try to accelerate some procurements. Number two, they're going to force some larger programs to be broken up. And the end result here is that it's a little bit of a hopscotch game in terms of value that the government's actually going to receive versus the risk management versus cost savings in terms of overall objectives that they're trying to get to.
Okay. We're going to take our first break. You're listening to AmTower Off-Center on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. We will be back with Bob after these messages. Welcome back to AmTower Off-Center on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. I'm Mark AmTower. My guest today is Bob Davis. You can find Bob on LinkedIn if you want to get in touch with him. Any other way you want people to get in touch with you if they have questions?
No, I'm on LinkedIn under Bob Davis.
Okay. And he's the only Bob Davis on LinkedIn. So, not really, but we'll leave it that way. I'll put Bob's LinkedIn URL at the Federal News Radio website. So, small and medium-sized companies have a variety of challenges that they're also faced by large companies, but large companies have more resources to deal with them, and they are going to go after more contracts. So how does a small or medium-sized company prepare and select the battles it's going to fight?
One of the first steps that needs to be done, Mark, is the company really needs to understand its differentiation. A lot of companies talk about this, and they think in terms of we do A or B particularly well, but they're not really distinguishing themselves in the market. The differentiation is very important for purposes of brand management, brand identity, messages that they want to give back to the market. Differentiation can be created by a combination of attributes. It's not one or two things. So, for example, a company may specialize in government work. Over 90% of their work is federal government, and they may specialize in a particular area of technology, integrating it into operating environments, and they may offer better labor rates, for example, on a GSA schedule than large competitors, and their senior management team is accessible, engaged in day-to-day business. And the size of the company may allow them to be more flexible, more responsive to customers' needs. The combination of these attributes and others give them a differentiation. The second point I want to make is that there's some wonderful market research that has been done by Hinge Research Institute and Hinge Marketing, which is based in Reston, Virginia.
Lee's been on the show before.
Huh? Yeah, Lee Fredrickson's a good guy, very, very knowledgeable, and I encourage all of you to reach out to Hinge Marketing because they're doing the basic research that we need in this industry so we get past gut feels to make decisions. But in the book, Inside the Buyer's Brain, which came out in 2013, on page 32, there's an extremely important graphic which demonstrates the following. Hinge Research went and interviewed and surveyed 1,400 services buyer, both commercial and government, to ask them what their top 10 business challenges are. And the top 10 business challenges are the economy, adequate budget, finding and keeping good people, cost control, maintaining quality as you would expect, dealing with and adhering to regulations and policies, managing constant internal change. Well, guess what? Number 8 or number 9 in this survey were technology issues. So the buyers of services are not worried particularly about technology. It turns out to be far down their list of worries and concerns. Related to that, on page 34 of the book Inside the Buyer's Brain, which came out in 2013, they asked the buyers, who did they give their top ratings to for the importance of solving key business challenges? And I repeat that, solving key business challenges. Well, architectural engineering firms got the highest rating, followed by accounting and finance, who was equal to management consulting firms. Far down the list was technology services companies. This is a very important point because apparently technology service companies that are used to selling faster, cheaper widgets are not really applying their tool or technology to solving key business challenges. So the medium and smaller size businesses that you ask about originally, Mark, have got to make the shift to being business people and applying their tools to helping the customer solve problems, given the customer's current operating environment.
Okay, but what if the procurement doesn't address that particular issue? What if it's purely a tech buy?
If it's purely a tech buy because of the procurement regulations, they, of course, need to respond in a compliant manner to the requirements in the solicitation. However, they should put in there somehow or another insight or language that demonstrates broader understanding. This will increasingly become a bid discriminator.
Okay. So the marketing challenges for small to mid-sized companies, the marketing challenges are myriad because the media scape has changed.
This is a very good point, Mark. A lot of companies in our business have very low visibility. They're just not visible to the customers. They're not visible to the market. This was okay in the past. It's no longer okay. They need to address their lack of visibility. They are not receiving customer referrals. It turns out, according to work done by Hinge Marketing, 70% of customers indicate in surveys they don't get referrals because they're not asked for them. 70% of customers don't give referrals because they're simply not being asked for them. That's extremely interesting. A huge
That's
percentage.
Silly.
Well, it's very basic. That shows some cultural dynamics in these companies. A related issue is that approximately 60-65% of these companies, when they have a new requirement, they go with another company because they simply did not know that their incumbent supplier did this kind of work. No one told them. Another fundamental error.
Can we stop there a second?
Sure.
I remember when Bob Lamb was running Accenture, and he recruited you or running part of Accenture, excuse me. He recruited you for a while, and he brought you over. Correct me if I'm wrong. He brought you over because a lot of money was being left on the table because task orders were not being done. Is that accurate?
I would phrase that Accenture, very, very sharp people, very sophisticated firm, was faced with the problem of bidding $1 or $2 million task orders, and they have a very sophisticated process and capability for bidding large proposals, which they're known for, and they were faced with shifting that down to a low-cost, efficient, rapid bidding model for task orders. So I was brought in to work with the team there to address that issue, which we did.
Okay. So it's not necessarily a new issue, and it's not one restricted to small biz.
That's correct. The other dynamic of the small and medium businesses is they don't have any lead generation capability. This is extremely important. Now, lead generation in the commercial market, of course, is different than lead generation in the government market. Mm-hmm. But there's still nuances to this and ways to produce leads in the federal government, which we'll talk about in a moment. They're not generating any leads other than management networking and BD people knocking on doors, which is an expensive way to do it. And my last marketing challenge that I see today is that the companies have no brand identity. Their reputation is unclear in the market. I'm not talking about integrity, but I'm talking about reputation for doing particular work. They're not visible.
Known for specific
expertise.
Yeah.
They're not known for particular expertise or capability, and they have low visibility. And when you add all these issues together, they're going to find it increasingly hard to compete because the market is going through a fundamental shift, which I'll talk about.
Okay. So give me some specifics on the brand management side here, particularly as the impact small biz.
Well, basic, very simple definition of brand is the brand is the value perceived by a customer beyond the price that they pay for. Mm-hmm. In other words, what do they get beyond the price they pay for? So it's an intangible. Brand establishes an emotional connection with customers, what can be what some people refer to as mind share. Brand attributes are how does a firm characterize its brand? Now, brand attributes can be that you declare yourself similar to other firms. In other words, I do this as well as company A and B, or you are distinct from other firms. I do this differently and I do it better than company C and D. Another brand attribute is the experience that you bring to the table. You have deep capabilities and that you produce outcomes for customers that are significant.
Let's pick up the experience side on the other side of this break. You're listening to AmTower Off Center on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. Welcome back to AmTower Off Center on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. I'm Mark AmTower. My guest today is Bob Davis. We're talking about various marketing, branding issues pertaining primarily to small and medium-sized businesses, but they impact everybody. So, Bob, in the experience side, you talked about the capabilities, what you do, how you do it. Continue, please.
Well, capabilities are really a combination of a company's competencies, knowledge, experience, qualifications, and so forth. Capabilities are what you actually do and the outcomes you actually produce that you can speak to factually. Competencies are built upon your subject matter expertise, the people you have for you doing the actual work. What is their years of experience? What are their credentials? What is their level of education? Are they recognized as being experts in industry? And then another dimension of experience is the assets the company actually have. Do you have a functional IDIQ PMO and defined processes? Do you have distinctive bid review and proposal processes? These are assets that can strengthen your brand attribute. Brand positioning is what are you communicating to the market in terms of what you do and how you do it?
Now, on the what we communicate, or does that also include where you communicate it?
Yes. Okay. Yes. There's a whole raft of considerations in terms of the channels that you use for communicating your brand attributes, and this needs to be carefully thought out.
Okay. Now, let's talk about tactics then. Let me ask one quick question, though. For smaller firms, if they can successfully differentiate themselves, will that necessarily lead to more business even if they're a subcontractor? If the client understands a particular expertise, does that help them in that? So we both know from you from more direct experience, me from tangential experience, that small businesses as subcontractors are getting less business.
Yes, as a subcontractor, a lot of small businesses are bound by the terms of the subcontract, which was usually an extension of a previously agreed to teaming agreement. In terms of them getting their share of the business or being a real partner to table, this is really driven by the prime, the integrity of the prime, and the commitment of the prime to small business. A small business has a responsibility on one hand to be a good partner and a trustworthy partner with the prime, and at the same time, they need to make the customer aware, to the extent they can, of their capabilities, their competencies, their abilities. Because frankly, some of the contracts that come up for renewal, the small business sub can suddenly be the prime and the prime suddenly be the sub. It's in everyone's interest to intelligently and appropriately work these issues together, share information together, and frankly get away from the strict traditional prime sub relationships that has given some companies a bad name in town.
Okay, let's get into the tactics then. So give me some traditional things that are currently being done, not being done, and how do you measure success here?
Well, a lot of companies today do basic things, such as they may put out a press release, they may have a few small business partners they work with, they have various types of marketing collateral, brochures, presentations, white papers, and this is sort of routine and traditional. And this level of brand management tactics, if you will, was adequate in the bull market. It is no longer adequate. There's a whole slew of other things that can be done that are very important, such as formal market research, engaging in business social media, customer contact management, web publishing content management, so that the information at the website is relevant and current and meaningful to customers, both existing and new customers. Search engine optimization, which is a field in and of itself. Having 45, 60-second online videos, having blogging being done every other week by your technical staff, internal trade shows. This is another huge area that companies just totally forget about. Companies have two brands. They have a brand with the external market, their customers and partners, and they have an internal brand with employees. The internal brand with employees is as equally important in terms of how employees perceive the company and speak about the company.
Well, witness the fact that ever since the web was born, there have been, you know, you name the company, and right after it says SUX.com.
And internal trade shows are half-day activities where the program managers and directors, program directors, take 10 minutes on each program and educate people on what the company does, how it does it, what the outcomes are, and so forth. And management educates the middle manager and lower managers and the PMs and the deputy PMs on the company's brand. High-quality executive seminars. When I talk about conference engagement, I'm talking about writing a paper that is presented at a conference or leading a panel. I don't expect a small business to do all of these options in terms of brand tactics, but you should sit down and consider what you can do given your resources.
Well, there is off-the-shelf research that they can purchase, like the stuff at Hinge or Market Connections. Business social media is a matter of learning the tool and how to leverage it. I've been teaching classes on LinkedIn now since 2008, well before the tipping point in the government market. Customer contact management is you know, technically an off-the-shelf tool, but it's one that I haven't seen done well here in many companies.
That's correct. There is a historical context here. A lot of companies have, frankly, underinvested in marketing. Yes, they have some sales or BD people, and they've got some brochures, but they really have not considered strategic marketing. They've really not considered brand management. Customer contact management specifically gets to how you communicate to customers, when you communicate. Do you send a newsletter? Do you send an email? And not too often. You give people ways to opt out, and you send things that have value to customers. This is related to web content management, about mm-hmm. that, keeping all of that material up to date and accurate and fresh.
Right. Now, I think part of the problem with management is the traditional view of advertising and marketing, and their perception that, you know, what was the line? 50% of... do you have it here? Do you know the one I'm calling for? 50% of ad budgets are wasted. If I knew which 50% to spend, that's what I'd spend. So,
well, the companies have there are different ways to get attention in the market. Traditionally, you can buy advertising, as Mark mentioned, as you mentioned, Mark, and you can go to trade shows. This can be expensive. This can be a high cost. Going through your BD people, one contact at a time, is another approach. This too can be a high cost or expensive. Dealing with press releases and PR firms and reporters, if you do it right, can be sort of what I call a medium cost. It's something you should consider to look at effectiveness. There's a concept which is having a digital brand, where you have a strong online presence. This is a low-cost way to get market attention, and I might add, this is where the industry is going.
Okay. We're going to go ahead and take our break now so we have a longer last segment. You're listening to AmTower Off-Center on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. We will be back after these messages. Welcome back to AmTower Off-Center on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. I'm Mark AmTower. My guest today is Bob Davis. Bob is a longtime BD and now BD slash marketing professional. Actually, you've all of the courses you've taught for me in the last 20 years have always, even though they're BD focused, they always have a heavy marketing component to them. So let's talk a little bit about the traditional BD model versus the newer online.
So for decades in our industry, there's a traditional model for business development activity, which is still valid. A BD person would go and meet a customer face to face, would try to establish a relationship with this person, get an opportunity to demonstrate the firm's expertise, and over a period of time, through different mechanisms, presentations, technical discussions, white papers, or whatever, build trust with that customer, get the customer's confidence that the firm can, in fact, do this type of work. And after a procurement process, hopefully become a client. This is the traditional BD model. It's been in effect in our industry forever and still is, and is still valid. What the industry is moving towards slowly but surely, particularly starting the past 3 or 4 years, is a digital BD model. A digital BD model. A digital BD model is a whole different slant. From the customer's perspective, a government customer will have an issue, a problem they want to understand, they need information on, so they're seeking education. They want education on this problem. And in the process of doing searches online and looking for information about this education through searching white papers, searching blogs, searching technical presentations, they will identify an expert who works at a company, a subject matter expert. There may or may not be a communication. And through seeing the depth of expertise and knowledge, they establish a level of trust with this person and or their company. And after a procurement process, that leads to a client relationship. The digital BD model requires integrated activities between business development operations and the firm's subject matter experts. This is extremely important and, frankly, a new operating model for today's businesses.
Okay, so give me some idea. I mean, you throw out a fair amount of concepts there, not the least of which is subject matter experts. How do you develop a subject matter expert? Let's not go there right now. Let's talk about the tactics necessary to get from point A to point B for, you know, any size company, but particularly for smaller firms with smaller budgets.
Well, in the material I was studying in the book Professional Services Marketing, it came out in 2013. On page 218 of that book's extremely important information that talks about the web tactics employed by high growth services firms, the highest and fastest growing services firms, both government and commercial. What are the specific web tactics they use? And this is important. The number one, and they're in rank order, descending order, is search engine optimization, followed by blogging, followed by white papers and other collateral. Next, LinkedIn, Twitter, executive seminars, customer newsletter, and then having appropriate online videos. Most companies do white papers and other collateral, and some do LinkedIn or Twitter, not necessarily to the extent.
Do LinkedIn, you know, have a presence there is you know, level of activity varies greatly.
Absolutely. The quality varies greatly. Now, again, I don't expect a small business to do all of these, but to do one of these or two of these is deadly. And again, it demonstrates an underinvestment in marketing, and I encourage people to kind of revisit this. And if you take the time to read Professional Services Marketing, you'll find out a range of activities that are possible.
Okay. Now, I want to take one of these in particular, blogging. Lee and I talked about this when he was on the show a couple of months back. But blogging intimidates some people because they don't think they can write. There's a lot of talent out there now, particularly freelance reporters, et cetera, who understand the market, who understand the technologies, who, after they pick your brain for a little bit, can do the blog for you. This is not brain surgery. A lot of websites now are being built on platforms like, WordPress? Pay attention, folks. Generating content does not have to be pulling teeth.
Absolutely. And blogging should be a part of a subject matter expert's weekly responsibilities. And when I talk about blogging, I'm not talking about writing a 600, 700 page column every other day. Mm-hmm. It can be as short as 4 or 5 sentences. It can be as seldom as once or every 1 or 2 weeks. But having that out there and having the SME stay within their subject matter arena can really make a difference for a small business trying to generate leads with limited resources.
Okay. Now, one of the things that I know we agree on is a website has to have, number one, it still has to be there. But give me the quick list of the goals there, please.
Well, most people's websites are basically electronic brochures, and they're not serving the organization well. Websites are supposed to support the generation of revenue, help generate revenue. They're supposed to generate quality leads. They're supposed to provide current and new customers with information, pertinent information, and of course present the company to a larger community. When a year goes by and your website does not generate a single lead, your website is not doing its job and needs probably some serious analysis.
Well, one of the issues with the websites is they tend to be stagnant. People think once they put them up, you know, you only alter it when you offer a new service.
No, a website through website content management, which is extremely important, should have a publication schedule. It should involve all functions of the company. The marketing department or the webmaster may manage the site, may edit the content at the site, may put up pretty graphics, but at the end of the day, excuse me, the different functional areas in the company have to own their own sections and content.
There you go. Bob, thanks so much for joining me again. Greatly appreciated. I'll put Bob's contact information at the Federal News Radio website, federalnewsradio.com. Click on the shows, look for Amtower Off Center, and this show will be there. This is not my day job. As I mentioned during the show, Bob will be teaching with me. If you want to see the classes we're offering, go to govevents.com or the Government Market Master Group on LinkedIn. At govevents.com, look up either Amtower or Government Market Master Forum. And thank you very much for listening to Amtower Off Center.
You've been listening to Amtower Off Center, sponsored by General Dynamics Information Technology. If you missed any part of this program, you can hear the entire show or any of our weekly programs anytime at federalnewsradio.com. Amtower Off Center, only on Federal News Radio 1500 AM and federalnewsradio.com.